Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, August 10th, 2016, episode 12.03, the preseason week one show. That's right, football is upon us. The preseason starts tomorrow, and there'll be games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and even one on Sunday. I'm going to talk about Hard Knocks kicking off this season and showing the brutal reality for players in the NFL. ESPN is at it again, this time with its NFL quarterbacks tier ranking poll. It's cray-cray, people. Let me tell you that much. Cray-cray. The Hall of Fame game was canceled, and I'll share my thoughts with you on how I think the NFL let that happen, why the NFL let that happen, and why they should be ashamed they let that happen. Plus, my great buddy Sky Sports News reporter Richard Graves will join me to talk the preseason games he'll want to watch and if the preseason games are worth it. Plus, I'll examine Joey Bosa's mother putting a verbal smackdown on the San Diego Chargers. And Josh Norman got a job with Fox. He did what? With who? Without telling his coach?
What?
And in our new producer segment, I'll take a look at the quarterback battle and strong offensive line in San Francisco. That is a lot to talk about, so let's chomp it in.
Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves.
That's right, lots of football coming to you this weekend, preseason games. Every single team will play either tomorrow or through Sunday. And we've got just football is back, and I'm so excited. I can't even talk to you right now, people. But before I get all into the football, let me give a hat tip to the USA athletes competing in the Olympics. Oh, my goodness. Hat tip Michael Phelps. 21 gold medals, 24 overall. He's still got a few more. I mean, he could possibly leave the Olympics with something like 24 or 25 gold medals. That's just that is amazing, people. That is just I don't even know how he does it. He still just finds the will to compete. The semifinal in the 200 meter breaststroke where the South African dude was there kind of doing the shadow boxing in front of him, and he just had this focus, this determination. It was crazy. It was great TV. I could not stop watching. And then he actually did it. He got in there. He beat him, and the South African didn't even medal. So that's just the focus that this guy has. Hats off to Michael Phelps. Hats off to the women gymnastics team. They won by a full 10 points, okay? That is the equivalent of a football team blowing somebody out 50 to 10, all right? Like a 40-point blowout in the NFL, that is basically what the American women gymnastics team did. They won by like 10 points in the prelims, and then last night in the all-around team overall gymnastics competition, they won by like 8 or 9 points. It was just a beatdown. It wasn't even close. You know, usually in gymnastics, there's that, oh, my God, they need to get like, you know, 1/10 of a point more so that they could win by 2/10 or something like that. And there was none of that. And here, just to put that in perspective, all right, so the next closest team was 9 points away. If you fall off of an apparatus or you make a huge mistake on like a floor routine, that is a point deduction, okay? You lose a point. So basically, the four American gymnasts that were competing last night could have fallen off 8 times, and they still would have won, okay? That is how dominant they were. Hats off to them. Simone Biles, Gabby Douglas, Allie Raisman, and my new personal favorite, little Laurie Hernandez. They were spectacular. Congratulations to them. All right. Putting the Olympics aside, I'll go check into the pool a little bit later with Michael Phelps. Right now, it's all about football, and how about the Los Angeles Rams and Hard Knocks? If you haven't watched Hard Knocks yet, the first episode came out yesterday on Tuesday, and every Tuesday from now until the start of the season, there will be an episode of Hard Knocks with the Los Angeles Rams. This is brutal, people. Not even 5 minutes into the show, the first thing they show, Jeff Fisher gets on the phone. He calls quarterback Nick Foles. Says, hello, Nick, how you doing? How you been doing? What have you been up to? How's the family? That's great. I'm calling you because we're going to release you today. Boom. Just like that, right off the bat, ain't no joke. Now, we already know that Nick Foles got released, but to see it on the show, and they don't even, like, call him in. They're like, hey, Nick, we need you to come into the office so that we could talk to you about some things. No, no, no. This is head coach Jeff Fisher on the phone calling the quarterback saying, you ain't got to go home, but you got to get up on out of here. Boom. Hangs up. It's over. That's it. That's all Nick Foles gets. Now, I'm sure that the league, the team, you know, has to do some stuff with the league and kind of release him outright. But all he gets from the team is this call from the head coach saying, we're releasing you today, and it's over. Then the show goes on a little bit. All the players come in. They're in UC Irvine, a college campus out here in Southern California. That's where they're having their training camp. And the players come in to the first team meeting. And in the first team meeting, Jeff Fisher says, I only have two rules. Two rules. All right? Now, I don't know about you, but I think I can handle two rules. And his two rules are, be on time, don't be late. And two, don't have any visitors in your dorm room. Okay? And he actually goes on to explain, because we're going to be here for the next couple of years, I don't want you to come back to training camp out here, you know, next year, and there's a little three-month-year-old, four-month-little-old kid running around looking at you from the stands because that's what you did while you were here. So be on time, no visitors in the dorm room. A day later, undrafted wide receiver, what's the dude's name? Deion Lewis, I believe. Yeah, Deion Lewis, wide receiver, apparently has a girl in his dorm, and it's late. It's about 30 minutes before curfew, and one of the coaches comes in early and finds him. He's got a girl in the room. So you see Jeff Fisher. He brings the kid in. He sits him down, and it's like, Deion Long. Let's tell him. He's like, what are my two rules? I think I was pretty clear about my two rules. My two rules were, be on time, no women in the dorm. He's like, but coach, she was bringing some stuff. She wasn't gonna spend the night. She wasn't staying. I forgot some stuff, and she brought me some stuff. And, you know, it was before curfew. You know, the coach just showed up before curfew to you know, and he found her there. And Jeffers says, yeah, but my rules are pretty simple, and we want you to do it. And Deion Long, you broke the team rule. You had a woman in your dorm room. We're going to have to let you go. Go pack up your stuff. And the dude packs up his stuff and is gone. Now, yeah, he's an undrafted free agent. Very likely wasn't going to make the team anyways. But he's finished. Just like that, I don't understand why you can't wait to get your woman after training camp is over. I don't get it. This is your shot. You're an undrafted free agent. They brought you to camp. If you go out there and shine, possibility is you might be able to stick and make this team. Because outside Stedman Bailey and Tavon Austin, they do got the rookie Pharaoh Cooper. And I like that. I like that name, by the way. Pharaoh. My name is Pharaoh. I'm a Pharaoh Cooper. Outside of those three guys, though, Deion Lewis was a fast kid. He could have fought to be the five or six guy if they keep six wide receivers. But just like that, it's over. You're done. And you know what? Because you're a free agent wide receiver, ain't no way Jeff Fisher is going to give you a good recommendation anywhere else. You're done in the league. I don't think anybody else is going to pick you up. Just like that, that is the brutal reality that these players face. They have got to perform. They have got to be on time. They have got to show that they are worth keeping around, or just like that, without a care in the world, they get cut. And that's what Hard Knocks showed. The show is the same recipe as it's always been. They're going to show you a few stories here and there. But the fact that they focused heavily on Jeff Fisher and his whole, he got angry because who was the player? I think it was Tavon Austin who got cramps in the middle of practice and he had to get carted off and couldn't finish the practice. And this was the day after he had to cut Deion Long for breaking the rule. And he goes into like, look, I'm not going 7-9 again. I'm not going to do it. I'm not, or 8-8 or 9-7. Okay. I'm not going to do that. He's like, this was some 7-9 bull blank this morning. Deion's gone. That's 7-9 bull blank. And we don't need it. You guys take ownership in this thing, okay? You take ownership, and you take your ownership, and you trust that I know what I'm doing here, and we're going to be just fine. He's determined to make winners out of the guys. He says, we are too talented of a team, and I'm not going to settle for that. I know what I'm doing. So kudos to Jeff Fisher. But I think Jeff Fisher understands this. I don't care that the Hard Knock cameras are here looking at me. I don't care that we're being recorded at every meeting and in every practice. I care that we need to win now. We are in Los Angeles. We are in L.A., Vato. Remember from Escape from Los Angeles, Escape from L.A.? We are in L.A., Vato, and we want winners. They want winners here. And we're going to give you a year or two to win, Jeff, but we aren't going to stand for 7-9, 7-9, 8-8 over and over again. That's the one thing about Los Angeles. There's a lot of things to do. There's a lot of places to go. There are a lot of other teams to cheer for. You are now in Los Angeles. This ain't St. Louis, where they're going to keep coming back if you just keep going 8-8 and 8-8 and 7-9 all the time. You have got to win some football games. You have got to get double-digit wins. You have got to get into the playoffs and win some games and show that you're a winner, or this team is going to see that, hey, there's a lot of stuff to do in L.A. We don't have to come watch a losing football team. Jeff Fisher knows that, and I think he's trying to give that message to his team early. And I'm excited to see the rest of Hard Knocks and see how it plays out because, man, just right off the bat, cut. See you later. You ain't got to go home, but you ain't got to be here. So check it out if you haven't seen it, every Tuesday night on HBO. Okay, so here's an interesting story that came out this morning. ESPN and their quarterback tier rankings. Now, apparently this is the third annual or the third time that ESPN has run this poll. Here's how the poll works, all right? I believe it was Mike Sando, the reporter for ESPN. He got 42 league insiders is what he calls them. 10 general managers, 5 head coaches, 7 offensive coordinators, 5 defensive coordinators, 8 personnel scout evaluators, and 7 other position coaches and their executives. It's 42 people. He told the coaches and evaluators to take the 33 quarterbacks and place them in one of 5 tiers. Tiers 1 through Tier 5, where Tier 1 is reserved for the very best, and Tier 5 reserved for the very worst. Now, here's how the tiers play out. Tier 1 can carry his team each week, and the team wins because of him. Tier 2 can carry team sometimes, but not as consistently. Tier 3, he's a legit starter, but needs a heavy run game and a defense to win games. Tier 4, might not want this guy starting all 16 games. And Tier 5, don't think this guy should be a starting QB. So those are the 5 tiers, and there were 33 quarterbacks that they were asked to assess. Why 33? Because the San Francisco 49ers have listed Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick each as co-starting quarterbacks. And what have we said about co-starting quarterbacks? If you don't have one starting quarterback, you've got 2 starting quarterbacks. You've got no starting quarterback. And that's been said a lot, and I'm starting to believe it. So Gabbert and Kaepernick are on this list. That's why you have 33. They've actually got Case Keenum as the starting quarterback for the Rams. So Jared Goff isn't on this list. But here are the 33 quarterbacks. All right. Tier one was only three quarterbacks made it. Tom Brady of the Patriots, Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers, and then a quarterback that I thought was a little surprising, Ben Roethlisberger. Those are your three quarterbacks in the tier one section, okay? And tier one is basically they're saying that the team wins because of the quarterback. I could say that about Aaron Rodgers, sure. Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe they win because of him. I think this because of other players around that kind of make that team go. So, but here's the deal. All 42 coaches and executives put Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady in Tier 1. All 42. It was a tie for first. Roethlisberger, 33 of the coaches and executives put Roethlisberger in Tier 1, and 9 put him in Tier 2. But that's it. Now, Tier 2. This is, as they say, quarterbacks that are, they can carry the teams, but they're not as consistently. Okay, that's what we're looking at here. And I'm not going to go through the whole list, but I'm going to tell you some of the ones that I think are a little surprising that are in Tier 2. And wait till we get to the bottom. But Tier 2 has the guys Cam Newton, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, Carson Palmer, Tony Romo, Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, and Andy Dalton. That comprises the list of Tier 2. The majority of the first few guys there, for Cam Newton, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, Philip Rivers, they all got double-digit coaches or GMs putting them in Tier 1, but the majority of them put them in Tier 2. Eli Manning, Carson Palmer, Tony Romo, they all had a handful of coaches and GMs put them in Tier 1, but the majority were in Tier 2. Eli, Carson, Romo, Flacco had a handful putting them in Tier 3. No Tier 4s there. The bottom of the list, which is the guys in Tier 3 and Tier 4, they had a lot of people putting them in Tier 3 and Tier 4. And only a handful of players were put in Tier 5. I'm going to talk about now. I'm going to go to the bottom of the list. Here's the bottom of the list. At 29 was Colin Kaepernick, and right behind him at 30, Blaine Gabbert. So once again, San Francisco, you say you have two quarterbacks. You really have none because they're both at the bottom of the barrel. Both of those quarterbacks had a handful of coaches or GMs put them in the tier five category, which these guys should not be starting. Mark Sanchez was 31. He had 12 GMs or coaches put him in the Tier 5 category. RG3 was 32. I found that kind of shocking. 11 people put him in the Tier 5 category. And dead last on the list at 33, and why we should push for Jared Goff to start in Los Angeles, Case Keenum. No Tier 1, no Tier 2, nor Tier 3. 22 head coaches, GMs, or other executives put him in the Tier 4 category, and 20 put him in Tier 5. He has no business starting in this league. That is just stunning. I mean, Case Keenum wasn't that bad, but you got almost half the people that are being polled putting him in the category, this guy should not be a starter. 11 people saying RG3 should not be a starter. Mark Sanchez, 12. This guy took two Jets teams to two back-to-back AFC championship games. 12 people said he shouldn't be a starter. I don't know who these, you know, they're all anonymous. We don't know who they are. It's the Rams need to look at this and like everyone's saying, start Case Keenum, let Jared Goff take a couple of weeks to learn the system and check it out and stuff. And I'm saying, why? So you could play the 33rd ranked quarterback on a list based on, this isn't just some guy in a computer, I think that Case Keenum should be last. No, this is 42 player people, coaches, player personnel, scouts, GMs. They know their football. And to a man, they all said Case Keenum was the worst quarterback in the league. Probably shouldn't be starting in the league. Be a backup, he'll come out. The knocks on him is that he doesn't have a strong arm, that he's pretty smart, and he's got a good work ethic, but when it comes to making the right decision on the football field, he usually won't do that. That's not good. That is not good. So that would kind of point to maybe having Jared Goff start for the Los Angeles Rams. The Cleveland Browns just named RG3 their starting cornerback, and he is second to last on that list. I think Teddy Bridgewater, Blake Bortles, they were in tier three. You know, they're young guys. And I think they might, you know, Ryan Tannehill's in tier three. Tyrod Taylor's in tier three. It's tough because you haven't seen a lot of these guys. They're young. Let's see how they do. I mean, Sam Bradford is the last quarterback in tier three. He is just shy of entering tier four territory. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. It's an interesting list. I think it's a little crazy because you can't tell from a lot of these players. I mean, Derek Carr's only played one football season, and they've got him at the top of tier three. So, yeah, let's give him a little bit more time to breathe before we're saying, yeah, he's better than, you know, Marcus Mariota and better than Blake Bortles and Bridgewater and Tannehill and Taylor and Sam Bradford. That's where they've got Derek Carr. It's tough. It is tough to make that call this early in a player's career. So if you want to check it out, ESPN.com. If you're an insider, you could check out the list, and each one has a little kind of an average rating and a little explanation as to what some of the GMs and coaches said about that quarterback. All right, I'm going to move on to Bosa, who's still not with the San Diego Chargers. But before, I'd like to thank all of my patrons on Patreon. If you haven't checked it out, please do www.patreon.com. That's patreon.com/NFLRandR. NFLRandR. So there you go. You can go to www.NFLRandR.com as well to see the link to Patreon and find out how you could become a show donor. Everyone who's become a show donor, thank you very much. You should be receiving emails shortly. We need to get addresses to send out the NFL Rants and Raves exclusive sticker through Patreon. There's a lot of you show donors who continue to donate through PayPal. I will be getting in contact with you shortly to show how you can get some of these cool exclusive things that we're doing for Patreon. You guys have been supporting me the longest. You've been supporting me through PayPal for years and years, and I want to make sure that you guys get in some of these cool gifts and rewards that we're giving the folks who are subscribing through Patreon. I want to make sure that you guys get it as well, because as I said, you've been supporting me for so long, and I really appreciate it. So thank you very much. Check it out, patreon.com/NFLRandR. Thanks a lot. Now, Joey Bosa, still not with the San Diego Chargers. Still hasn't showed up to camp. Still in negotiations with the San Diego Chargers. Here's the thing. His mother took to Facebook, and she wrote, "Wish we pulled an Eli Manning on draft day." And I'm like, ouch. I'm like, oh, man, go for the gut. Go for the jugular and just take him out. This came from, first of all, if you're Joey Bosa, I'm like, yo, mom, I don't need you to go to war with the team for me, please. Please don't go to war with the team. I don't need that right now. I'm negotiating. I'm trying to get into camp. I don't want them to kick me out. Okay. Second, mom, I'm a big boy. I can take care of myself. I don't need you fighting my battles. Because she went straight out for the jugular. Like, we should have pulled an Eli Manning. And if you don't know what I'm talking about there, what she's talking about there, a few years ago, the San Diego Chargers drafted Eli Manning. After Archie Manning had said that Eli would not play in San Diego, and basically the Chargers were forced to make a trade with the Giants. The Giants drafted Philip Rivers, sent Rivers to San Diego for Eli Manning, along with a couple other picks. And now Joey Bosa's bringing up what's pretty much, it's got to be a kind of painful memory for the Chargers. And to bring that up, have your mom bring that up and throw it out there, it's got to hurt. But as of right now, there really isn't much Joey Bosa can do. If he is that unhappy that the Chargers want to defer some of his salary and put offset language in the contract to defer his salary, his signing bonus, to 2017, if he's that unhappy, his only recourse now is to sit out the season and enter the draft again next year. Does he really want to sit out the entire football season because a team is not going to give him $10 million today, but they're going to give it to him April of next year? That's literally what we're holding out for. We want all our money now. We know how this works. This is how it's always been done. Give me all my money now. True, the San Diego Chargers should do that. Most every team knows you're picking 3 overall. You are going to get a rookie at that spot, and you're going to pay him the money, and this is how much the signing bonus is going to be, and you got to do it. And I think the Chargers are being a little cheap, but I think Joey Bosa is also being a little unreasonable here. He's going to get his money. It's just whether he gets it now or whether he gets it 10 months from now. I don't know why that's a big deal to him, but it is for some reason. Someone needs to ask him, why is this a big deal to you? You're getting paid. You're going to get paid. It's your money. It's guaranteed. Why aren't you taking it? It might be the Dallas Cowboys, actually, because with the 4th pick, they took Ezekiel Elliott, and they gave him like a $16.25 million signing bonus when he signed his contract, and all of his money was guaranteed, the $26 million or whatever. So Joey's saying, look, the Cowboys paid him all up front. Why do I have to wait for my money? I shouldn't have to. It's bad for it. It looks bad for the player, but it looks especially bad for the team and the San Diego Chargers, who are trying to get some goodwill with the people in San Diego, who are trying to maybe vote on a referendum that's coming up to build a new stadium to keep the Chargers in San Diego. This is not looking good. This looks like you're a team that's pinching pennies, that you don't really want to spend for your players to put the best product out on the football field, and it doesn't look good for the Chargers. Sure, it doesn't look good for Joey Bosa. It looks like he's a whiny kid who he's like, I want all my stuff, and I want it right now. Give it to me right now. That's what he sounds like. That's what he looks like. But you know what? Everyone else around him who got drafted ahead of him or behind him is getting his money right now. He should get his money right now too. And the San Diego Chargers are not putting any goodwill towards the fans in San Diego. And I think the fans in San Diego might just be fed up. They might be done. They might be tired of the Chargers saying, hey, we're going to go to Los Angeles. We're going to leave this town. You know what? Maybe it's time for the fans in San Diego to just say, fine, you want out of here? Leave. You're not putting good players on the field. You're not putting a good product out there for us to see. The stadium is horrible, and, yeah, not many people go, but that's because, you know, you sell tickets and packages for other teams to come in here and scoop up the tickets. So, you know what? Enough's enough. And fan base may just stop watching the San Diego Chargers altogether. That is a possibility because the Chargers are not showing good faith by bringing in their number one pick. He's the 3rd pick overall. They should pay him what he's due and move on and get him in camp so that defense can start working to get better. So in a sense, I'm kind of with Joey Bosa's mom. Maybe they should have pulled an Eli Manning on draft day. Anything. I mean, I think she's trying to help her son. She probably shouldn't. There really is no way for Bosa to get traded at this point. So he's going to have to either play or sit out a year. I don't think he wants to sit out a year. So we'll see how this one plays out. Hopefully by week 2 in the preseason, Joey will determine what he wants to do with his NFL career. All right, before we get to our executive producer segment, it's time to get the buddy in here. Okay, it has been a mighty long time since my next guest has joined the show, but that's because I've been gone for so long. Welcome, buddy, Sky Sports News reporter Richard Graves. What's up, Gravesy?
Hey, Steve. Good to speak to you again. It has been too long. 8 months, something like that.
It was a very long time, but I'm glad you're back. How are you doing, first of all? You still going to be covering the NFL for Sky Sports?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm back as well. Doing very well. It's been a busy time over here in the UK. Obviously, we've had the European Championships, soccer, as you guys know it, in the States. We've got the Olympics going on now. And then, of course, what are we, 4 weeks away from kickoff with the NFL? It's going to be another big season on Sky Sports, more live games than ever before. And how do we follow up from Super Bowl 50? An amazing game in many respects, not just the result, but Peyton Manning's story. Defense wins championships. You've always told me that, Steve. So I did in Super Bowl 50. So, yeah. Oh, no, hang on. You didn't tell me that. Was that not yet another key game you lost last season?
Yeah, that was I did ride with the Carolina Panthers. I will say that I went with Carolina. But come on. There were two crucial fumbles there by the Carolina Panthers that was not like them at all. They didn't have mistakes like that at all during the regular season or during the playoffs for that matter. And then in the biggest stage, the biggest game, they have two crucial fumbles that pretty much let Denver take that Super Bowl away.
Hang on, let me enjoy this moment, because it's the first time I've spoken to you in a long time, certainly since the last NFL season was wrapped up. And what do you call these one-off games that we decide every week? What's your phrase for them?
It's the challenge game.
The challenge game. And what were you against me last year?
I don't know. I missed a couple.
Oh, and 5, including Super Bowl 50.
Oh, and 5.
I'm feeling pretty good about this.
And that just shows you how good I was the rest of the time, because I still managed to win, even though I went 0-5 against you.
It doesn't happen that often, so I'm just going to savor it. I don't want to gloat. I don't want it to come across as if I'm gloating. Let's consign that to last season.
Oh,
let's
folks,
get it on again. Another year.
Believe me, folks. He's gloating. Let's get to it. I'm going to start off with last weekend Hall of Fame game. First game of the preseason for everyone to enjoy off a great night, where Tony Dungy and Brett Favre and Kevin Green and Orlando Pace and Dick Stanfield and Kenny Stabler and Marvin Harrison all went into the Hall of Fame. And yes, we're going to play some football now. 1 hour before the game, we regret to inform you that we're going to cancel the Hall of Fame game. Comes out the NFL and cancels the game. How bad does that make the NFL look?
Well, let's not beat around the bush here. It's embarrassing, isn't it? It's the opening salvo in a new season. It's the Hall of Fame. It's everything that goes with that week. It's a showpiece occasion, an exhibition game to officially get the preseason underway. And it's going to be shown nationwide on ESPN in the States. And now, 60 minutes before kickoff, you decide the surface is unplayable. It's a big decision. It is embarrassing, but the NFL do come out of it with saving a little bit of face, this citing player safety as an issue. They say it's always paramount concern. The players and coaches weren't happy. Let's be honest. It's an extra game in preseason.
True.
We're not going to learn anything from it, are we?
No, not at all. It is an extra game, and the two teams that are selected to play the Hall of Fame, they always play that one extra game. Everybody knows that. Here's my issue with it. Yes, you can tout player safety all you want, and as a matter of fact, the correct decision was made because it was made for player safety. I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is you don't have enough people. This is a $7 billion a year organization. You're trying to tell me you don't have enough people, enough manpower to see this field before 1 hour before game time to say, hey, we need to fix the field because we're not going to be able to play on this.
Look, let's be honest. I think there were some people there that were hoping they'd just get away with it and the guys would play. Now, player safety, great. You're backing up with hard evidence everything that you say. All the rhetoric was backed up in that one evening. Does it look good for the NFL? No, it does not. Is it great publicity for them? No, it is not. But from a practical standpoint, if you're an Indianapolis Colts fan or you're a Green Bay Packers fan, you're probably loving it because that's one less game you've got in preseason, one less opportunity for your players to get injured before football for real gets underway at the beginning of September. Look, it's not good. It is embarrassing. But when all's said and done, I don't think a lot of people in the football side of things will lose a lot of sleep over it. I guarantee that behind the scenes, the ground staff and so forth at Canton will have known all about it from the NFL, and I guarantee this won't happen again.
Yeah, well, sure, it's not going to happen again. They're going to replace the field. And they were going to replace the field. Here's my thing. They were going to replace the field before they canceled the game. So they knew that this field needed to get replaced already. Why couldn't the NFL throw a little money ahead of time and get this field squared away before now? I think it was really bad on their part. But, Richard, this week, as a matter of fact, tomorrow, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, football is going to be played. What games are you most anxious for week one of the preseason?
Well, not only is football going to be played, but there's a number of teams this year that need these preseason games, that need to iron out a few creases, need to put some guys in there, see how they roll. There's going to be some schemes that these guys have to go with and make sure they're on song for game one that right now, even though we've had 2 weeks of preseason, they're not sure about. And we straight off the bat, the New Orleans Saints at the New England Patriots, Tom Brady, Deflategate, finally consigned to the history books. He will miss the first four games of the regular season. So step up Jimmy Garoppolo. He was taken in the draft 2 years ago. He was second round pick for the New England Patriots. He's had a handful of snaps, but nothing of any great meaning for the Patriots. Well, you look at how they go out of the gate, start the season in that opening month. They play the Cardinals, the Texans, and then two big AFC East games against the Bills and the Dolphins as well. They could conceivably go 0-4. I don't think that'll be a surprise to anyone. You know, you're talking about a Patriots offense that Tom Brady has made look good, especially in recent seasons when he's had no real weapons, Rob Gronkowski aside, to work with. Well, now we'll see what happens when Garoppolo goes in there. And it's a tough start. New England have to be firing. And you know Bill Belichick, he will come up with something. We've seen it before when Brady missed a year injured and Matt Castle suddenly stepped into the breach. Won 11 games or won 10 as a starter. Will he be able to do the same with Garoppolo?
Yeah.
Well, the first step towards that is tomorrow night.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a very good game. Tomorrow night, though, I'd like to see how the defending Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos are going to be on the offensive side of the ball. They go to Chicago to play the Bears. And here's the deal. Look, you've got Mark Sanchez, you got Seaman, and you got the rookie Paxton Lynch. And the Broncos right now don't know who they're starting. As a matter of fact, I think, didn't they say that both Sanchez and Seaman were going to be their starter in one shape or another?
And how damning is that if you're Mark Sanchez? Come on, let's be honest. You were the number one pick for the New York Jets in the draft. You bounced around via Philadelphia now to the reigning Super Bowl champions, the Denver Broncos. And in all honesty, right off the bat, Mark Sanchez should be going into training camp, and at this point, it should be his job to lose. It's not. It's an open competition. And at 2 weeks into training camp, we're being told that there's nothing to choose between these guys. It's a problem for the Denver Broncos, not just Mark Sanchez. It's a problem for the Broncos. Great, they signed Von Miller to this record deal a few weeks back, and they have much of the league's number one ranked defense from a year ago.
Hey, you just said defense wins championships. You just said that.
Yeah, defense wins championships. Can you catch lightning in a bottle 2 years in a running?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. The thing they had with Peyton Manning, as poorly as his play was, generally speaking, last year, they had the experience, and in crucial moments of games, he was able to make the right decisions. You're not telling me that Mark Sanchez is half the quarterback that Peyton Manning is mentally. I think that's a huge problem.
What other games are you interested in this weekend?
Well, there's a couple of games. The first one will be the Oakland Raiders going to the Arizona Cardinals. And I like this matchup for two reasons. First of all, the show All or Nothing, which featured the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know if you saw it earlier this summer.
I fell in love with Bruce Arians. Absolutely. Go for it.
I thought it was a great insight, you know, Steve, into the mechanics of what makes an NFL team tick, right from the draft through to the playoffs and ultimately the end of the season. Brilliant behind-the-scenes insight. Can they emulate the run they went on last year? Can they better that and get to Super Bowl 51? And what about the Oakland Raiders? I loved the way they played last season. Amari Cooper, Derek Carr, Michael Crabtree. They have potentially an outstanding offensive unit there. The question comes on the defensive side of the ball.
Defense,
they've lost absolutely a lot of experience there as well. And they're quick, but have they got enough defensively to keep them in games? And who knows, in some occasions, win games.
Yeah, you're right there. I think the loss of Charles Woodson in the secondary is going to haunt them. Obviously, Hall of Fame player in my book. He was great in his career. Having to hang up the cleats is always hard, but I think it's going to hit the Raiders a little hard there.
No, I absolutely agree with that.
You have to be looking at a game that has the Los Angeles Rams playing in Los Angeles for the first time in 21 years hosting the Dallas Cowboys. You got to be looking at that game.
Well, football is back in L.A. It's been a long time. I know you're excited because it means you've got football on your door. Will you be going down to see this game?
It is actually Jeff's birthday that day. We had thought about going to the stadium and checking it out, but we're going to take it in together instead at home, celebrate his birthday, and watch the game on the big screen.
All right. Well, there's a lot to like about this game. First of all, the L.A. Rams returning to Los Angeles. And of course, you've got the big question. Does Jared Goff have a starting role right off the bat from week one? We're going to address that a little bit later, I know. But these preseason games for him are huge. His first games as a professional football player. You want to see whether Todd Gurley as well can build on what was an outstanding rookie season for him. We all know about the Rams' defense. I don't think there's any question marks about what Jeff Fisher has done there on the defensive side of the ball. The question is, can the Rams get it together offensively? Can they make that big splash in their opening season back in Los Angeles? And on the other side of the ball, what about the Dallas Cowboys? You've now got to fit Dez Bryant. You've got to fit Tony Romo. You've got a number four overall pick in Ezekiel Elliott. Can they catch lightning in a bottle once more? Everybody looks back to 2 years ago when they were written off in training camp. No defense of note whatsoever. They go 12-4 and make it through to the second round of the playoffs. Well, you look at them on the defensive side of the ball this time and with injuries and suspensions. And let's be honest, the lack of a notable signing of a defensive lineman, which I found amazing, quite frankly, through the course of free agency and then the draft. They left it till the third round till they picked a defensive lineman there. They did well 2 years ago. I'm not so sure they can pull it off again this year, especially when you have question marks of whether Tony Romo can go 16 games in a season. So it's going to be an interesting preseason for the Cowboys as well. And then on top of that, I'm intrigued to see how the two New York teams go, both the Giants and the Jets. We were fortunate enough to have Odell Beckham over here in the UK a month ago. And I got chatting to him and asked him what he thought of the way things were going in New York. We're under a new coach, of course, with Tom Coughlin gone. This time, Ben McAdoo has taken over, the former offensive coordinator for the Giants. And Odell Beckham is confident. He was pretty forthright. Nothing less than a place in Super Bowl 51 will do. And he's really high on this kid they took in the second round, wide receiver Shepard. We all know the big splash they made on the defensive side of the ball through free agency as well. They've got a lot to prove. What about the New York Jets? Ryan Fitzpatrick back in the fold. Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker and co. all made it clear they wanted him back. Geno Smith is probably not the happiest man in the Jets organization. He might have thought he had a chance of winning back the starting job. But it's a big year for them as well, having gone so close last year. So the opening week of preseason games, I think there's a lot of questions to be asked. We're not going to find out all the answers, but maybe we'll get just a hint of what to expect over the coming month leading up to opening week.
Yeah, the Jets and Giants both hosting week one preseason games. Jets are hosting the Jaguars, and the Giants are hosting the Dolphins. Jets go Thursday night, Giants go Friday night. So lots of good action there in the National Football League, week one of the preseason. I'm actually looking forward to Sunday night when the Houston Texans travel to San Francisco to play the San Francisco 49ers. It's the only game on Sunday, so I'll definitely be trying to watch that one. I want to see what the San Francisco 49ers have to offer. They're another team that have gone ahead and announced co-first-string quarterbacks for Colin Kaepernick and Blaine Gabbert. Co-first-string quarterbacks. Now, I don't know how you have co-first-string quarterbacks, but it is Chip Kelly, which means that he might put Gabbert under center and have Kaepernick in the wing or something, you know, available. They might both be on the field. Who knows, because it's Chip Kelly. But co-first-string quarterbacks, that's how they're being billed right now. I want to see what that looks like when they take on the Houston Texans.
Well, all I'm going to say to you, Steve, is Hard Knocks, Houston Texans, 12 months ago. How did that turn out?
Yeah, no, exactly. Just last week on the podcast, I said, you know, the head coach there, he was like, I'm tired of the media, you know, saying bad things about these quarterbacks. They're good. We got some good quarterbacks. We get to change the mentality. And then all season long, he went back and forth, and it was just horrible. So, yeah, I'm
– Well, how long did Brian Hoyer last as the undisputed number one quarterback in Houston? Was it
a week?
One half – and half of a quarter, something like that. He was yanked in the third quarter, wasn't he, of the opening game?
I think
last
third
season.
Quarter, yes. I think it did not last very long. It did not last very
long. Co-starting quarterbacks do not work out very well. This isn't a bold prediction, but I expect the San Francisco 49ers to be picking in the top five of the 2017 NFL draft. I'm going to say that right off the bat. And what is a bold prediction is that I do not think the Houston Texans will make it to the postseason this season. For all the free agency money they spent, the big name, high publicity signings of Brock Osweiler, of Lamar Miller. Lamar Miller was a man that wasn't deemed worthy of a new contract in Miami, and he wasn't seen as a three-down back in Miami. Jay Ajayi has stepped up and already been named their starting quarterback, starting running back, and they've also taken Arian Foster. On top of that, Brock Osweiler just didn't do enough for me in Denver. You know, for all the talk of how poorly Peyton Manning was playing last year, ultimately, when they needed the win, when they needed a drive in the regular season, Peyton Manning was reinserted back into the game, and it wasn't because he made a huge play, a big touchdown pass. It was because he had the mental prowess in the game to make the right decisions at the right time and lead his side on a drive down the field. Now, Brock Osweiler has been paid handsomely for his move down to Houston.
Yeah.
There are big expectations down there. Can he live up to them? Well, now we're going to find out.
Yeah, we are going to find out. I'm not very sure that he is going to be able to live up to those expectations. Richard, thank you very much, as always. It's great talking football to you. We've already lasted 20 minutes. That's what we do when you come on the show. We just talk football, and it just seems effortless.
Hey, I love it, Steve. I can't tell you how excited I am that we're going to actually see some games this week. And now the countdown really is on. 4 weeks to kick off in Denver. Repeat of Super Bowl 50, which might not have been the most entertaining game for the casual observer, but I've got to tell you, I was fortunate enough to be in that stadium on Super Bowl 50. I was able to witness the game firsthand. There was some outstanding defensive plays made on the ball. The atmosphere was electric. It's just been too long since we've been able to experience that, and it's coming, and now it's coming quickly, and I cannot wait.
I'm going to make my prediction already for week one. I've got Cam Newton and the Panthers getting revenge. Revenge in week one. They're going to revenge the Super Bowl loss.
Well, I tell you what, it's not often that the reigning Super Bowl champions lose on opening night. I think Baltimore went down a couple of years back, but they weren't playing on home soil. Do you know what? This pains me to say so, Steve. I'm going to agree with you.
Oh, my God. He's agreeing with me on something.
I am agreeing with you. Cam Newton and the Panthers avenge their defeat in Super Bowl 50. They go to Mile High Stadium, and they leave with the W. How about that?
There you go. Early, early week one predictions. You heard them here first. Richard, thank you very much for stopping by the show.
A pleasure as always.
So there you go. Lots of good football this weekend. I cannot wait. All right, now I'd like to introduce our executive producer segment. This executive producer segment, I'd like to thank very much our new executive producer, Jeremy Parker. Jeremy, thank you very much for becoming an executive producer of the show. And this week, we're talking about the quarterback battle in San Francisco and the offensive line of the San Francisco 49ers. Is it their secret weapon? All right, first off, I'm going to start with Gabernick and Kaepernick. Gabernick. There you go. There you go. Mark it down, folks. That is a new name here on NFL Rants and Raves. That is what we're calling the quarterbacks in San Francisco, Gabernick. All right? Because they're saying that both Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick are both co-starting quarterbacks. I don't know how you do that. I've never actually seen that in my life. So instead of Gabbert or Kaepernick, it's Gabernick. There you go. Gabernick just was created right there in front of your very eyes. Here's what Chip Kelly is doing. He's trying to make these two players compete for the starting job, yet he's doing kind of a disservice to both of them at the same time. A lot of people say the right choice is Gabbert. Take a look at Blaine Gabbert. He's probably got a better head on his shoulders. He probably gets the game a little bit better than Colin Kaepernick does. He should be the clear-cut starter. I say, well, take a look at Kaepernick. He's a lot more mobile. He knows how to do that read option because he did it for a while there in San Francisco. If Chip Kelly wants to be successful offensively again, he has to have a mobile quarterback. Period. That's it. That's all there is to say. Period, full stop, end of story. In his system is only going to work if he has a mobile quarterback. So for everybody who's saying, well, it's just a foregone conclusion that Blaine Gabbert is going to be the starter in San Francisco, I'm like, is he the more mobile of the two quarterbacks? Because if he is not, then it's not a foregone conclusion. Chip Kelly needs a mobile quarterback. And what he wanted to do in Philadelphia was he wanted to draft Marcus Mariota to come into Philadelphia and be his quarterback. He tried to pull the trigger. He tried to, you know, on draft day with Tennessee, he tried to move up with them. They couldn't pull the trigger. Marcus Mariota went to Tennessee. Chip Kelly was stuck with Sean Bradford, one of the least mobile quarterbacks in the league. They weren't very successful. Now, he is in San Francisco. He's been given another opportunity, and he cannot make the same mistake again. His offensive system is predicated on an east-west read that you can move your quarterback with ease, and Blaine Gabbert is not that guy. He is a pocket passer. If Chip Kelly is getting ready to change his offensive philosophy and have a quarterback under center most of the time and have a drop back passer, Blaine Gabbert's the guy you go to. If he's going to run his system where he's going to have 70 to 80% of his plays in shotgun formation, then the guy I believe you have to go to is Colin Kaepernick because he's more mobile. And yeah, he struggles reading the field down the field, but if he can tailor his offense to where he only has to read half of the field to make his option, decide whether to run the football or throw the football, that is probably his best option. And if it doesn't work after 4 or 5 weeks, you pull him and you put in Gabernick. If you don't, if you start with Gabbert and then after a while it doesn't work, you put in Kaepernick, I think that's the wrong way to do it. I think you start with the mobile guy and you move to the pocket passer. If you start with the pocket passer and he doesn't work out for you and then move to the mobile guy, that is the wrong order to do it. So I would say – start Kaepernick and put Gabbert on the ready. Say, hey, you're going to be ready to come in. You got to be my guy. You got to be focused. You got to make sure you know your stuff. But Kaepernick is who the San Francisco 49ers and who Chip Kelly have to be just wishing that he can pick up this offense so that his mobility will help him do what the offense needs to do. Speaking of the offense and the offensive line for the San Francisco 49ers, I was shocked. My executive producer, Jeremy Parker, says, I think that the San Francisco 49ers have a secret weapon, and that secret weapon is their offensive line. So I thought about it for a second, and so I'm going to tell you why the offensive line cannot be a secret weapon. If you just look at the offensive line on its own, you got center Kilgore there. Joe Staley is a perennial Pro Bowler. He's a great guy. Zane Beatles, who is going to start for the first time next to Staley. Apparently, I've heard Staley in some interviews say that he and Beatles are starting to gel. They're starting to work really good with each other. He says the thing about, you know, being an offensive lineman, you have to trust that the guy next to you is going to be doing the right thing, and he's got to be able to trust that I'm going to be doing the right thing. And right now, he says they're on the right page. On the other side, they got Trent Brown and Andrew Tiller. And as a whole, when you look at those five guys and you look at that unit, oh, yeah, that looks pretty good. That I can see where Jeremy is saying, yeah, that's the secret weapon. That's what's going to hold the San Francisco 49ers together. That offensive line is pretty great. And so I will give you that. I will concede the fact that the San Francisco 49ers have a very nice, talented offensive line led by Staley and Brown and Kilgore there. I think they're going to be really good. Here's why I do not believe they are a secret weapon. You just have to look at the backfield. And right now, in the backfield, your running back number one, your du jour, is Carlos Hyde. This is a guy that missed 9 games last year due to injury. Okay? This is the guy that in his 2 seasons in the NFL hasn't rushed for more than 407 yards in any one season. This is a guy who's talking about he could rush for 1,500 yards. You can if you stay healthy and play every game in the NFL. Now, in Chip Kelly's offense, Carlos Hyde could have a really good season. But my problem with Carlos Hyde is that he does not have the physical body to take a beating that a running back takes in the National Football League. And I don't believe that he is the guy who can get it done for 16 games. If the San Francisco 49ers had a running back who could carry the rock for 16 games and give you a solid 100 yards every single time out, I would say, yes, that offensive line is going to be fantastic. They could be your secret sauce. They could be the way the San Francisco 49ers win some football games. But because they really don't have a running back outside of Carlos Hyde, right now on their depth chart, they got Sean Drawn. That's his name. I didn't make it up. Sean Drawn and Juwan Harris as the backups there. I'm not sure they've got enough of a punch to be well. I mean, Carlos Hyde had a great opening game last year. I think he rushed for like 168 yards against the Minnesota Vikings. He never rushed for over 100 yards in the remainder of the season. Then he hurt his foot against the New York Giants trying to catch a football. He played in a few more, and then that was it. He was done. Then he didn't play the rest of the year. I need football players that could be on the football field every week, and that's not something that Carlos Hyde can do. And that's why I think even though the offensive line is going to be solid for the San Francisco 49ers, they really aren't going to have someone to rush to block for who can provide – a solid, steady rushing attack for that offense. So, there you go, Jeremy. Good offense. Good poke on the offensive line. I really like those guys. I don't like the backfield. And once again, when you list Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick and have a Gabbernick as your starting quarterback, you really don't have a starting quarterback, and that's going to plague the 49ers all year long. That's about all the time I have, folks. Real quickly, before I leave, I'll give you my final segment my final thoughts, and it is on cornerback Josh Norman of the Washington Redskins. Apparently, Josh Norman decided that he was going to take a job with Fox. He was going to do some preseason stuff. I'm sorry, not preseason, pregame stuff with Fox, whether it be pre-recorded or on his the bye week. I think the Redskins are off week 9. He would be in studio, and he would just do the occasional appearances on Fox. And he took this job with Fox, but he didn't tell the Redskins. And he didn't tell his head coach. How in the world? Look, Josh Norman's been coming out and saying, look, it's my time. It's my off time. I can do whatever I want on my off time. It's my time, and I can do what I want, and I can do what I please. Look, stop singing at me, Josh. I get it. I understand that during your off time, and when you're not working with the team, and you're not practicing, and you're not on the football field, you can do whatever you want. Josh goes on and says, look, I ride a horse on my off time. They can't tell me what to do. If I want to ride a horse, I'll ride a horse. Nobody's telling me anything about that. So I could do and choose whatever I want to do. I'm around my horse all the time. And everybody is like, oh, great. So why isn't everybody like, oh, great, that I want to work for Fox? Well, here's the deal. And this is more of a rant towards the networks a la Showtime with their Inside the NFL hiring Brandon Marshall to come in on Tuesdays or whenever they shoot that show. And now Fox to get a guy like Josh Norman. These guys are currently playing on the football field. I guarantee you there are a handful of experienced retired NFL players that you can call on to come in and do your analysis and do your pregame and do a little pop-in here and there for Inside the NFL or for – shoot, you know what? Call me up. I'll be very opinionated and let you know everything I could possibly get, let you know about all the players and all of the teams. These guys are currently on the football field. Do you think they could really be completely open and tell you exactly how they feel about – in Josh Norman's case, about the Washington Redskins, about Jay Gruden, Brandon Marshall in this case, about the Jets, about Ryan Fitzpatrick holding out, then coming back in. Any of these situations that we are talking about right now in the media, these two guys can't give you 100% unfiltered responses because they have to think about what they're saying before they say it. Otherwise, they're going to get in trouble, not only with their team, possibly, but with other players in the league. They might say something negative about some other player on the team. Next time you know these guys get on the field, the other guy takes a shot at him. It's like, hey, why'd you take a shot at me? Well, dude, I heard you on Inside the NFL, and you said you just talked some smack. I'm showing you. Here's the smack. You want smack talk? Let's go. You are putting these players in a position to possibly cause altercations out on the football field based on the opinions that they say. Look, you've been doing it for years. You've been taking players who you retire, and you immediately put a microphone on their hand in front of them, and that's fine. I don't really like it because I'm like, look, they're football players, and I know that a lot of them do know a lot about the game, but they can't give you opinions and break down the game like someone else can, someone who all they've done is study football. But that's your business. But now that you're actually taking players that are still on the football field, that's just dumb. And Josh Norman, I know nobody cares what you do on your off time. And if you want to go and work for Fox during your off time, that's fine. But at the very least, be a man and tell your football club and your head coach that that's what you're doing. Hey, coach, look, Fox has approached me. They want me to do these pregame stuff. It's not going to interfere. It's going to be done all on my off time. It's not going to interfere the club. Can I do it? Let them at least acknowledge that you're doing. It's not good that someone goes to Gruden and asks him, hey, what do you think of Josh Norman working for Fox and doing this pregame stuff? And he's like, what? This is the first I've heard of that. Just outrageous. Inside the NFL, ESPN, NFL networks, now Fox. Just let the guys play football. Get them. If you want them that badly, get them when they're done and they've retired. Thank you very much, folks. I went way too long there with the Josh Norman story. Just wanted to be my final closing note. Want to thank Richard Graves for coming out and being on the show. Once again, thank you, Jeremy Parker, for becoming executive producer of the show. I really appreciate it. Everyone else, thank you for all the support and for continuing to listen to NFL Rants and Raves. You guys have been great. I'm going to keep doing it until you guys tell me to stop. I'm Steven Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.